174. Geez, doesn't say 154. It's 174. It's Super Bowl Sunday, which means, yeah, you all are here. But if you are avoiding the Super Bowl, I don't know, madness, problems, whatever it might be, thanks for coming here and hanging out. We're glad to have you. We are streaming live, of course, as we tend to. We got some awesome people here hanging out. Jose Ferreira is here. Dwarvik is here. Rex. Max is here. Thomas. David. Matt is here. Famelicus. I always get that one wrong. Kenneth is here. Build on Sound. Justin Chamberlain. And Tarzman are all here. So thank you all for hanging out. We're going to be going over something that this showed up quite a few times. One actually just this past week, where it's a very basic issue that beginner inventors will make. And it's one of those that just, like, until you recognize it, it's like, oh, yeah, I can see how people would miss that. And if you don't do this, you're not actually developing a product to solve a problem. You're developing a problem with a product. So part of this is making sure that the problem that you say exists actually exists, because it kind of needs to. If your problem doesn't exist, you don't actually have a problem, right? And your product is not solving anything of value. Before we get too deep, though, like the video, subscribe if you haven't. And apparently I'm supposed to stream with a higher bitrate, according to YouTube. That's weird. All right. Oh, because we're now doing 1440p streams. So that means I got to go ahead and crank the output. So, all right, here you go. Doubling my throughput. We will see if my internet can handle this. We are doubling if it works. I'm being told why. I'm being asked why. No? Why no? Stick with 1080. All right, we're going to stick with 1080, apparently. Oh, which I can't do unless we stop streaming. Welp. Screw it. We're going to send it. We're going to send it for this one. We will make sure to convert it back. I guess I could technically stop and then quickly restart it and nothing will go wrong. It's the same way as if we accidentally disconnected. Oh, yeah, no, we can't do this. I'll be right back. Okay. We should be back now. My internet could not handle 10 megs a second worth of an upload. So we're back at 1080. Sorry, I thought I was doing something cool for you guys, but guess not. Anyways, we're going to get back on track. I thought I was going to do something cool. I thought we were going to be awesome. No, it didn't matter. Anyways, thanks for hanging out and avoiding your family for a sport that none of us really like. Anyways, like the video if you haven't. And let's get into kind of the two big things that inventors bring to us. Well, the two big things that inventors don't bring to us that I kind of wish they did. And, yeah, it's kind of an obvious one. You have to actually know if you have a problem. So it's a common thing where an inventor will bring us a product and they say, it's a problem. Okay, how do you know it's a problem? Well, it's a problem for me. Okay, is it a problem for anybody other than you? Well, it's a problem for me. Is it? Well, of course it's a problem for other people. Well, okay, have you surveyed anybody? Have you verified it? Have you done any of the work to make sure that what you have is actually a real problem that multiple people have, or is it just a problem that you have? Who has this problem? That is a big factor. And if you tell me that your product is meant for everybody, you have not done your market research. That is the biggest thing that we see with first-time inventors, is that market research is just not done. And that sucks, because it's actually not that difficult. If you believe that your product is designed for everybody, well, then you absolutely have to go get a swath of people that would constitute everybody. Okay? Everybody is best described as what you can find at an international airport. And I know that one's kind of an odd one, right? Because an international airport's going to have a lot of people coming in, a lot of people going out. And as long as you don't get too close to security, because they're not going to like that kind of thing, you can go and ask people. Now, if you live out in the middle of BFE and there's no way for you to do that kind of thing, you're stuck with some other issues, right? But if you tell me your product is made for everybody and you can't provide me with any marketing data or, you know, customer interviews, you know, focus groups and all that, then you're just guessing that your product is made for everybody because you have a feeling. Now, look, I'm not here to tell you that your feelings aren't valid, because a lot of times people's feelings are incredibly valid. But in that very particular case, your feeling that your product is made for everybody is likely not valid. I'm sorry. And even when you look at a product that has had mass market adoption, let's look at Phase 10. We interviewed the inventor of Phase 10, Ken Johnson, right? We interviewed him about a year or two ago now. Ken was an awesome guest, loved hanging out with him. But even he said he did not develop his product for everybody. I've only ever played Phase 10 like twice. It's not my game. It's not designed for me. I'm not the target market. And Ken recognized that. If you have a product that wants mass market adoption, you have to understand that it is not made for everybody. Not every single person is going to buy it. Just like some of you will buy the Yeti coolers or the Yeti mug, some of you will go buy the Stanley, some of you will go buy the Arctic. You will go buy different brands because those brands are made for you versus those brands being made for somebody else. You have to recognize that your product has a market position. And if you think that it's for everybody, I would argue that your product is actually for nobody. I don't need to have the marketing plan. You don't need me. If you have someone that can build the world's best marketing plan, you don't need a product developer. You don't need a shop like 3D Musketeers. You need somebody that can just get you money, right? You need investment. You don't need product development. You don't need a 3D printed prototype. You need to license it because you have the world's best marketing plan. But I'm going to hedge a bet and say that you don't. And I'm sorry. I know that that sounds rude. It's not intended that way, but it's life. We have to accept the cards that we are dealt. And the cards that we are dealt are often, we might think we're smarter than we are. And that's okay. It's a very common human thing. I am not trying to put people into a position where they feel as though that they're, you know, well, not appropriate for their job. Instead, I want to put them in a position where they recognize what they're missing, and then they themselves can solve it. Part of my job, part of the job that we do here as 3D Musketeers, is to help people go from this idea in their head and move it to something that actually makes sense. Because ideas only have value when execution occurs. If you don't actually execute on the idea, it's not really worth a ton. Now, I will say there are some industries where that is not exactly the case. Take the, you know, dot-com bubble, the There are so many little bubbles that have existed where you didn't actually need a product to get a bunch of money. I guess the NFT bubble would be another one because they're not fungible. But there is not a ton of value in ideas. And you can say that you have a $1 million idea, but until it sells $1 million in gross profit, it's not a $1 million idea. It's just an idea. I'm not trying to be mean. So again, if I come off as being rude, it's not the intention. It is more of a frustration that it's something that we always have to do. It's why we're building the Making Awesome Academy. It will be here eventually. My intention is not to do it right now, but you know, I'm trying to get there with it. But nonetheless, its goal is to help people get this kind of information so that I don't have to send them away. I had to send 4 different inventors away this week. 4 different inventors, first time ever communicating with us, first time ever working with us, and I sent them away. We did this because I don't want to take people's money unless they know what they're getting themselves into. If you have an idea and you want to turn it into a reality, but you have no way of understanding how you make that money back, and you realize that's a problem, in good faith, I cannot take your money. Now, other companies absolutely will. There are companies out there, and there are people out there that would argue, take their money. It's not their problem. Or it's not your problem that they're not educated. But see, I argue that it is my problem. Because when we inevitably make their product, it isn't exactly what they're thinking of, and it doesn't sell because they didn't do their research. We have a problem. Because then they're going to come back and yell at you because apparently you did your job wrong and it wasn't that they didn't have their marketing together. Four different times in 1 week. And this is a very common occurrence where it's like, hey, your product is for, let's pick the football industry because it's the Superb Owl Day. Let's say it's for the football industry. And you say that your product is for everybody, but it's, you know, toward football. So you're telling me that an 11-year-old girl is going to want to buy your product. And I'm sorry, this is going to sound like very sexist. It's not. It's statistics. And if statistics are sexist, that's not my fault. So are you telling me that an 11-year-old girl is going to want to buy your football product? Because traditionally, the answer to that is no. They don't, right? Now, I'm sure there are some edge cases where there are younger ladies that want to play American football. I'm sure that exists. But if you tell me your product is for everybody and its positioning is after American football, why are you not going after middle-aged dudes? Because that should be the market. And depending on the team, you might be playing different racial leads to it. Because it depends, right? Race plays a game into this. This is part of how product development works. And if you don't understand your marketing position, and you're telling yourself that everybody needs it, everybody needs it, everybody needs it, everybody needs it, you end up with a product that nobody needs, nobody wants, and you're left wondering where the hell you went wrong and looking to blame, unfortunately, a lot of other people other than yourself. And if you do blame it on yourself, you can find yourself in a very dark place of this failure thing, right? If you don't know specifically who your target market is for, who your product is designed for, you are likely not ready to start inventing. Now, don't get me wrong. If you have a ton of money, you recognize that you're missing these things, and you still want to move forward with your product development, I am more than happy to help you. But I have given you those warnings. I have recorded the fact that I've given you those warnings. And if you come back and say, well, I didn't know, yada, yada, yada. Nope. Here's where I told you. Here's where you said you didn't care. Here was when we told you again that there is an issue. Here's once again where you told me you didn't care. And then I billed you. Now, this did not happen with any of these. Often when we work with inventors and they come into this knowledge, right? They don't understand exactly who their market is for. They will very quickly say, oh my gosh, thank you. I didn't know. It's something that I'm on the board of the local Inventors Council. It's something that I should point out. The local Inventors Council, something that I am pushing heavily, is that we bring in more people to teach inventors how to do business. Inventors are good in the brain side. They can do the thought side. But we need them to also be good in the business side. Because if they're not good in the business side, then this doesn't work. It doesn't work. The business side is where you make money. The idea side is where someone with a business side puts things together, makes it work. If you can have even a slight understanding of a more refined target audience, you will have a better chance of getting your product picked up by an investor, by a company who wants to license it. You have a better chance of getting in front of the proverbial sharks from Shark Tank. Because I promise you, if you thought that you're good for Shark Tank and you don't know your market position, you're not going to make it even close to the room with the sharks in it. Now, for those that don't know, Kevin Harrington, one of the original sharks, is actually local here to Tampa Bay. We've worked with him a couple of times. He's a very, very nice guy. But boy, howdy, can he be a hard ass when it comes to business. But I like that about him. He teaches a very, what's the right term for it? It's like a tough love for business, right? And I like that. Because if people feel personally offended by someone saying you need to know your target audience before you move forward, they're not ready for the reality of inventing, which, as we've talked about with Seth Polansky, those are all episodes. You can look up the Ken Johnson episode. You can look up the Seth Polansky episode, or mods if they want to drop it, they can. The reality of inventing is that the system's not designed to protect you. The system is designed to hurt you. The system is designed to protect big companies. Look at Disney and how long they were able to protect Steamboat Willie. Steamboat Willie should have been in public domain decades ago, and they were able to find ways to either lobby or whatever means that they used to get the USPTO to grant extensions over and over and over again. This is not an opinion. This is fact. Disney did this. And finally, they were denied. And now Steamboat Willie is in public domain. Which means Mickey Mouse, to some extent, is in public domain. The system is not designed to protect you, the small inventor. It is designed to allow those with millions of dollars for attorneys the ability to pay to win. Yes, I'm sorry to tell you, this world is a pay-to-win server, and you just haven't figured it out yet. It sucks. If you have figured it out, I'm sorry. Life is just kind of full of microtransactions when you think about it. And if you play your product as if it is a DLC or a microtransaction, you understand that it is not designed for everybody. It's designed for a very specific target audience that fits a very, very slim area. And the finer that you can make it, the better you have at understanding how your product can be sold. However, if you make it too fine and too refined, you don't have the broad appeal that you need. This is where it gets tricky. You can niche down all day, all freaking day, as long as you want. It's not going to change anything. It's not going to change anything. If you push your product to be as so refined that you know the exact person that would buy it, you are missing out on an audience that might buy it. You're missing out on marketing that you could be adding to your product or adding to your design that would appeal to people that would buy it for your target audience. Right? Let's say you're making a product for kids. You don't just want a product that's going to stand out to kids on a shelf. You want a product that is also going to speak to the parents that are going to buy it, or the grandparents, or the aunts, the uncles, whomever, that are going to buy it for the kids. It has to appeal to both. Even though it's the kids that you want to be the ones say, "Mommy, mommy, mommy, I want this toy." Versus the parents just finding it and the kids not wanting it. Yeah, like football for Taylor Swift fans. Exactly. Exactly like Tars Man says. It's like football for Taylor Swift fans. Yeah, I'm sure I would love to see the NFL's numbers since Taylor Swift started dating an NFL player. I would love to see their numbers because I would bet that their numbers have gone up by a measurable amount. Look, it's statistics, but it's hilarious. That's a funny one. That's a very, very good point. So, a marketing plan. You need to understand what it looks like. If you don't, you are bound to come into problems. I'm not saying that you absolutely need to do this kind of thing, right? Because you don't. But if you want to be successful, having a generalized idea of who your clientele are and why is incredibly valuable and it's important. Your target audience, if you think it is everybody, it is nobody. Let's take Yeti for example. Yeti very obviously knows their target market. These are people that are going to be very, very brand loyal. They might own iPhones because they're loyal to Apple. They might have iPads. They might have Macs. They are people that put a value on a brand as well as a value on the product. Because don't get me wrong. The company of Yeti makes a great product, but there are Yeti clones out there, competitors that have effectively copied Yeti bit by bit that are half the price. But you don't want to get caught on the bass boat with the Ozark Trail, the Walmart brand. You want the Yeti. Why? Because there's respect in that. Now, you might not care. But if you don't care, you're not their target audience. But if you wouldn't be caught dead on the bass boat with anything other than a Yeti, then you want the Yeti. And you're willing to pay for that name. If you care about price, you're not Yeti's customer. And they know that. They price their product as a premium product because that's what they want it to be. They don't want to be the cheapest game in town. They're not trying to be the cheapest game in town. They have a quality product and they stand by it. It's called perceived value. And if you can provide a product that has a high perceived value because of a brand recognition, you stand to make way more money, in my opinion, faster than the person that tries to race to the bottom when it comes to pricing. The reasoning is, it is, while technically easier to sell 1,000 items for $1 than it is to sell one item for $1,000, we're not at that price point for a Yeti. If we take a look at like the Yeti mugs, those are what, 40 to 50 bucks? The competitors are 20, 25, somewhere in that range. If someone can get me the pricing on that, that'd be great. But I believe it's the competitors are about a half to a third the price. They all effectively work the same. Actually, Project Farm recently tested those. If a mod wants to toss the Project Farm video where he tested all the different tumblers, that was a great episode. Whether you think it's scientific or not, it's still very anecdotal, and I think that that's valuable. Yeti realizes that they can charge a premium because of their brand. What did Yeti do? Yeti spent millions and millions and millions of dollars on marketing early on. They started sponsoring content creators. They started sponsoring people in their target industries. That is what they did. They found individuals that were thought leaders, and they said, oh, you're the big bass fisherman. Let us give you a cooler to put your drinks in, and we're just going to tell you. We're just going to tell you it's going to do this. You test it and find out if it works for you. And then it did. And they talked about it. And then Yeti went down the line and started giving them out to smaller creators. They said the same thing. And you see the same message coming from everybody. You don't call it a hyper-insulated cooler. You call it a Yeti. You don't call it your Ozark Trail. You call it a Yeti. Yeti has become the Xerox of their industry. The Kleenex of their industry. It's a copy machine. It's a tissue. But you call it Kleenex. Maybe you call that a Xerox. I don't know. Depends on your age. They've become the brand that is synonymous with quality. And therefore, if they are priced within a reasonable margin of what the cheap guys are, people are going to spend money on the big ones. Kit says, vacuum container. Remember some company called Thermos with that product out decades ago? Yeah, the double insulated vacuum, you know, the double wall vacuum insulated thing was developed in the early 1900s by Thermos. It is in public domain. What Yeti has done, what Stanley has done, what all these guys have done is not anything special. All they've done is marketing. And I would argue that Stanley has recently had one of the best marketing plays that they could have ever had. It was not their fault, and they handled it quite literally the best way possible. They had a customer whose vehicle caught fire. Her Stanley mug was inside the vehicle. The mug did not burn. She went to the car to go collect her things. She opened the mug, and there was still ice in the damn mug. That is great marketing to begin with. What did Stanley do? The CEO replied to her in a video, not in a comment, in a video, saying that not only are they going to send her a replacement, they're going to buy her a new car. That is the world's cheapest marketing for a viral product that I can think of. You want to know a marketing plan? There was no plan for that. And if there was a plan, whoever came up with that plan is brilliant. But I would also argue that in cases like that, enter that with a very strong level of skepticism. Was this a real car fire? Was this lady someone who was paid to do this? Did they actually set a car on fire to prove that their product would still have ice in it? Was this all a setup? I hate to be that person. But in this day and age, viral marketing campaigns like this that don't appear to be something that is set up and paid for, be skeptical about it. I'm not saying that this was one of them. It could be, but I'm not saying it. It feels very genuine to me. And if it is fake, They have done a phenomenal job at making it come off as genuine. But if you want to market a product, you need to know what your target audience is. Stanley saw that this mom, pretty sure it was a mom, but this lady is the ideal customer that went through a very traumatic incident. And they had an opportunity to not only have a little bit of good PR out of it, spend what, 40 grand? 40 grand to have a video get millions of views. I am sure that video is well above 50 million views. And I'm sure that the response that the Stanley CEO did is well above a few million views. That is the cheapest. That probably has the best ROI of any marketing campaign in the last couple of years. It is truly an astounding thing that Stanley did. And if it is a real story, my hat is off to them. If it is a fake story that was all kind of developed as a very, very clever marketing scheme, my hat is also off to them because they did a damn good job as passing it off as real. We see a lot of the viral marketing campaigns. I'm going to point out the airliners because they're kind of known for this. Airliners have a tendency to do that, where they will set it up to make it look real, but it's very not real. Anyways, we're going to move past this. I'm not going to say that your marketing is not good. In fact, I have worked with first-time inventors that come from a marketing background. I can't mention the company, but they are very successful now. We help them get off the ground. We help them develop what they're doing. They make accessories for, I'm going to go with exercise products. That's how we're going to say it. They make accessories for exercise products. They are successful. They are successful because the individual who was a first-time inventor is a C-suite level marketing guy. He knows his target audience because it's that is ingrained and burned into his head. He knows marketing because it's his job. The likelihood of you being a C-suite level marketing person at a major company, okay, we're not talking like, oh, like I'm C-suite for my company. No, his salary, it was likely more than the sales that 3D Musketeers did last year. Okay. And we had a good year last year, damn it. He knows his market. And when I asked him for his marketing plan, he said, let me email you. And he emailed me from his work email. And I said, okay, I guess I don't need to see your marketing plan. He kind of laughed. He said, I have a marketing plan. It's not something that I want to share because there's a lot of data that I'm using that I'm comparing to that is only data that I have access to. So it's not a public marketing plan. It's one that I keep for myself. I'm like, okay, that's awesome. I don't need to see it, but I kind of always have wanted to see it because the dude is crazy brilliant, and he saw a problem. He developed a product to solve the problem. He himself has the problem, so he knows who the target market is, and he validated it by producing samples that he gave away to people to verify if it worked for them. They gave him feedback. He modified, he adjusted, lather, rinse, and repeated until he had a product that worked for him. And now it is a successful product that is sold in the market. And I believe he has actually switched completely to injection molding and away from 3D printing, which is a super cool move to make. There are two ways for marketing, and Kit kind of touches it here. You could either have a great plan that is executed amazingly well, or you can get lucky. And while you might think that you're Daft Punk up all night to get lucky, if you will, your likelihood of getting lucky is quite low. So do the work. If your product is for people that watch American football, you should go to the places that sell American football gear. Okay? Go to your sporting goods stores and just observe. Observe who's in there. What are their ages? What do they look like? If you're, you know, reasonably good at identifying vehicles. What vehicles are in the parking lot? What are their average cost? Like, what are those vehicles worth? Because that can give you an idea of reasonably what somebody's income is. And yes, I know that there are people that are grossly spending more money on vehicles than they should. You need to, you have to understand that some of your data will look like there's correlation, but there won't be. Write it all down, because the difference between screwing around in science is writing things down. That's it's an Adam Savage quote. Oh, my brother just said it isn't science unless you, it isn't science unless you are writing it down. Yeah, he got the quote slightly wrong, but that's fine. Observing this information, writing it down, and understanding it is a great way to do it. What we've found for our clients is if you have kids, this is so much easier to do. This idea, this concept of going out and asking the general public questions is so much easier if you have kids. Why? Because the little kid is either going to be have no problem going up and talking to strangers, which maybe work on that. Or two, they're going to hate that kind of thing. They're going to look really kind of skittish the whole time. And you can say, oh, I'm actually trying to help my kid with a school project. And as soon as it's helping a child with a school project, nobody questions the fact that it's you. And yes, I recognize that that's somewhat lying to people, but people do this all the time, and there is no reason that you shouldn't take advantage of an opportunity if you have one. And while, yes, kids are brutally honest, a lot of kids don't like talking to random people all the time. Just be aware, if you do this inside of a private business, they are likely to tell you to leave. They generally can't tell you to leave if you're on public property. So we recommend that you do it in places. If you're thinking it's for everyone, start in an airport and then start working your way down. Because an airport will have a great kind of mix of people that come in and out of it, right? There are people from all over the world that are flying in. And like here in Tampa, we have the Tampa International Airport, huge airport. Hundreds of thousands of people are going to go in and out of that airport every single day. You have a great kind of mix of randomized target groups that you can work with. The only ones you're going to miss likely are the people that are flying private, because they're going to fly out of the Tampa Executive Airport most likely. And you can do the same thing there. Although a lot of times the private people don't go through. They don't go through the plebeian security lines. They go right onto the tarmac. But if your product is for the ultra wealthy, those that are flying private, you already know that. And you don't need to do that kind of market research. As Mike from Never Let the Machines Win says, I was doing it all wrong. I taught my kids not to talk to strangers. Missed opportunities. Yeah, when they're a lot younger, it's harder to do that. But when they're in like their kind of right around that, like anywhere between like 10 and 16, they understand that they've got a job to do, right? Yeah. Any younger than about 10, you risk them blowing the opportunity, right? Where they blow your cover. But yeah, you don't need to do a full marketing plan, right? And a marketing plan is going to include things like executive summaries and descriptions, the market analysis, the marketing and sales goals, and the strategies and tactics, budgets, metrics with KPIs, key performance indicators for reference, action plans and contingency plans, right? That's normally what is included within a marketing plan. You don't need that. Not right now. I need you to understand who your target audience is and validate that there is a need. If you have a product that helps people that play American football, and maybe it's a way for them to practice, have you asked people what is their biggest gripe about practicing American football? What is their biggest gripe? And see, you can't, and you have to be careful of not to lead, as a lawyer would say, you don't want to lead the witness. You want to say, hey, I'm curious, I'm trying to get into this industry. What is your biggest challenge with practicing? What do you hate about practicing? And you ask a bunch of people the same basic question. You see what their answers are, and you can start modifying your question to move toward answering the real question, which is, would you buy my product? Pio Poly has very well caught me. Mark and I DM a lot. We talk often. And Mark, for about 8 months, was just asking me kind of random questions, but they're very broad. And I was answering them. What I didn't realize is that Mark was grabbing data from me when it comes to, like, my business, what I want in a 3D printer, what my expectations are, what a budget would be, what build plate volume. And he did this by referencing other machines, referencing videos that we did. He was very, he knew exactly what he wanted from me, which was to get opinions on things for his new printer that he hadn't talked about yet. And when I figured it out, I shook his hand. Well, I mean, I told him when they launched Printer, I'm like, son of a gun. He's been using me for market research this whole time, and I wasn't smart enough to realize it. That is somebody that does damn good market research. If you have been working with someone on and off for a while, and they've never asked what you're making, it means that you've done a very, very good job to making sure that the questions that you asked were specifically built for the people that you asked them to not lead them into the fact that you're doing something. Or the people you're asking are idiots. That's always an option. I could be just an absolute oblivious moron. And some of the comments in our videos suggest that. I would argue that they're just being rude. But I don't think I'm the only one he did that to. Based on the product that he built and the way the community reacted to the Magneto X, that is truly something where somebody did their research. Everything from asking me about my issues with data security and asking what I would want to see. So they're using mainline Clipper. It's open source. They are, you know, they're letting you set up what level of security that you want. Why? This guy. Because of talks with me saying that if you are, you know, a product for a consumer and a product for a business are two incredibly different things. A product for a consumer, they don't care about data security, which is obvious given the comments on the videos where I get on Bamboo about their data security. People don't care about it. Businesses do. And it's a legal thing that businesses care about. And Mark knew this. And Mark knows that I'm one of the few that's a content creator and a business owner, and was a business owner before I was a content creator. A lot of content creators build businesses because of the content. I built content because of the business. And so I was answering questions of things that I want to see. I want to see a machine that if it is going to have a log file, that I can read it in plain text. That if it is going to have something that can connect to the internet, that I can determine what level of security, if any. And that the security is automatically turned on, and if I want to opt out of it, I can opt out of it. A system where I can use an open source controlling mechanism, whether it's Clipper, Mainsail, what's the third one that I'm thinking of? Crow's Nest? Is that it? Is it Crow's Nest? Crow's Feet? I always forget. There's one more. I'm assuming it's Crow's Nest because Mainsail would be a boat reference. Crow's Nest would also be a boat reference. Whatever. And Mark listened. Mark listened because he agrees that it's a thing. Crow's Nest is the webcam service. Well, that, damn it, that's actually a great name for a webcam service. There's Fluid as well, which would be the water. Is that like the base layer to what Mainsail is built on? I don't know. Whatever. They're all boat references, and it's kind of funny. And Mark did it right. And we can see that in the way the community reacted to this machine. The way that even though I don't think any content creator has ever filmed the Magneto X running, like actually printing. Like, I've never seen it printing. Joel's never seen it printing. Nero, who else has done videos on it? Like at shows, they've never been printing. There's always been damage that's happened during shipping. Everybody still wants to get videos with it because it is still the most unique printer to hit the market in a long time. I would say it's the most interesting printer since the Bamboo, since the X1 Carbon, right? Nadav says next week you will see review online. Really? And he says Nero got one. Interesting. Nonetheless, that is the, to me, that is the case of a product from not necessarily a first-time inventor. Oh, it was, there was a blog. Can someone link me that blog post? A mod will have to link me the blog post because no one else is going to be able to. Mark, while he's not a first-time inventor, it's his first time in this market. And his first time in a market means that he has to go through different research. Thomas says, Nero's got a mystery printer under a tarp. The rest is speculation. Okay. I'm sure Nero has a lot of printers under tarps. You do know that we put tarps on printers for enclosures, right? I'm just gonna put that one out there. Winslow Joy says, still concerned about the medical impacts of the Magneto for pacemakers and implants. I would say don't get close to it. That's what I would say. Christian says, isn't the X1 Carbon a dumbed-down Voron Trident? Okay, then maybe the AMS. But see, the difference that the dumbed-down Trident versus the X1 Carbon. The X1 Carbon is an out-of-the-box experience where a Trident just isn't. Anyways. You bought Mark's camera tracking rig. I don't know what you're referencing, Mike, but I'd like to know. Nadav says, external reviews. We are excited to share that a select well-known content creators will soon be showcasing Magneto X. Okay. Great. We have another soon TM in this industry. Oh, I love that. Anyways. I think that the Magneto X is a great example because it is a first kind of iteration. Piopoly has never done an FDM printer that I'm aware of. Period. They have only ever done resin printers. So this is a big new shift for them. And so if you're a first-time inventor and you're looking at this and you're wondering, well, how does any of this apply to me? I would say that there is a lot of information that you can look at, how others do things, that you can apply to what you are doing. And sure, you're not going to have the budget of these big printer companies. You're not going to have the budget of Yeti, and no one expects you to. What we expect is that you have a generalized understanding of who your target audience is. And I want to be clear. If those of you that I sent away this week are watching, and I told a few of you that I was going to talk about this week on the podcast, so I hope that you are. You don't have to make yourself known in the comments. I don't need that. If you want to, that's fine. But I want you to know that if you shopped around and found a shop that was willing to help you without that information, run. because they're just taking your money. I believe that an honest product development shop will not just take your money, but is going to help educate you in the process. I want you to show that you have something other than an idea. And I think that that is very fair. And it means that we work on a project together. If you want to pay my team to do a lot of the product development for you, by all means, go ahead. But it's a tougher one than you think. It will take time. And we don't know your product as well as you do. If you are not educated on what it takes to go to market with a product, your market will fail. Your product will fail unless you get lucky. And chances are, unfortunately, you won't get lucky. I want to see more inventors succeed. And you have to realize it's a numbers game. The vast majority of first-time inventors do not succeed. Ken Johnson talked about after his success with Phase 10, he tried to do other games, other ideas, and none of them took off. Chun Ung, the inventor of the Rainbow Loom, who we had on the podcast as well, talked about how close he was to utter failure, to losing his house, to losing everything. And then he got lucky. An order came in and he got lucky. Now, I believe that Chun did phenomenal market research that a lot of people didn't. But I believe luck played a huge factor into what he did as well. And I think he recognizes that too. But that luck, he turned into marketing. He saw that luck, and he didn't just ride on the luck. He got smart about it. Getting smart, that's the big deal. Now, you know, the technical business plan, right, has a bunch of different things, you know, the market analysis, organization, like how you build the company, your products or services and how you build them. And there's a bit in there for a marketing and sales strategy. There's stuff in there for pro forma financials with operating plans and all that kind of BS. I recognize that when you first start, you have a lot of question marks in your business plan that often also includes your marketing plan. Having an understanding of your target audience is not something that should ever be a question mark. And in fact, doesn't ever need to be a question mark. It is not difficult to figure it out. It will take time. As I've told the people just this past week, if you spend less than 40 hours or you talk to less than 1,000 people, you don't have a large enough target. You don't have a large enough sample set of data. 100 is the absolute bare minimum. Bare minimum is 100. And if you can't find 100, you're either not trying hard enough or you don't know where to look. And if you don't know where to look, how would you expect your clients to know where to look? The other thing that I challenge people with is product size. That remember that your product has to go on a store shelf. Whether you design it and sell it yourself or you license it, your product still has to sit on a store shelf. And if your product is huge, nobody is going to carry it because the amount of shelf space it takes up for the amount of net profit that it provides to the retailer doesn't work. Why would they sell your big, huge, I'm going to go with a goal for a soccer goal, right? Why would they sell a full-size soccer goal that couldn't be disassembled in a store? They're not going to. What they're going to do is sell the one that can break down, because the one that can break down, they can put in a box and put on a shelf. And they can make more money doing it, because obviously the foldable one should have more profit. You need to look at if the need extends beyond you. It's a very tough thing to have to come to terms with. But your product might only solve a problem that you and a couple of your friends might have. Just like the problem that I have, where I have to remind people to like the stream and subscribe if they haven't. I continually forget. And hey, if you do want to support us, links down below for Patreon, PayPal, YouTube channel members. 10 buck tier higher gets you access to the private Discord, which where as soon as we're done, I'll be hanging out for a few minutes until I go into some editing stuff. So I'll be around for a little bit. But anyways, I'm yawning a lot. It means I'm not breathing well. But you got to make sure you ask the right people. Asking a lot of people is not asking the right people. As well, that's not necessarily true. Asking a lot of people is right in the beginning. You want to slowly figure out, okay, I'm making a product for American football. The average housewife probably doesn't care about it. There will be some that do, but if I develop a product for American football that is tailored to 11-year-old girls, I'm probably not going to have a product that sells well. If I design a product for American football that sells to 18 to 45-year-old men, yep, that'll probably sell well. And if I design a premium product that sells to the, let's go with 25 to 55 category, right, where there might be some disposable income, well, hang on a second. Disposable income means I can sell it for a premium price, get premium net profits, and not have to play a numbers game. I can sell that premium product. And even better, if I have both of those products, where I have the one that has the more mass appeal, then I have the one that's the premium product, a price ladder, if you will, where you can go up to get to different tiers, where it makes sense. Well, I mean, in for a penny, in for a pound. Apple is famous for these price tiers and famous for being one of the best out there to do it. Do you want the plebeian iPhone with 64 gigs of storage or whatever the hell it is? No. You want at least the 128. It's a couple hundred dollars more. And from experience, NAND flash chips are not that expensive. Do you want the MacBook Pro base model, or do you want to put some extra spec into it? You obviously want to put some extra spec into it. So put some extra spec into it. It's going to cost you, but you can't upgrade it down the road. It's why I'm a PC guy. Previously, I had an Intel 10400 in my PC. I saw a great deal on a 10700K, so I grabbed it. Just swap the CPU, swap nothing else. Just swap the CPU in. When we realized we needed an editing PC, I built a clone of my computer, except I didn't buy a CPU. I used that 10400 that I have, and it's now in our editing PC. I run a 10700K with a 1080 Ti, 32 gigs of RAM. That is, other than a 10400, exactly what the editing PC runs. I'm pointing at it like you guys can see it. That's what the editing PC runs. They are the same motherboard, same power supply, same exact graphics card down to the SKU. It's the same SKU. So in the event that any of either of those products fail, so like if my PC has a power supply issue, which it did, my old power supply died on me, I'm able to rip the power supply out of the editing PC without unwiring the whole thing. And I can just plug in the wires and I know they're going to work. Products like that are built for people like me. Fully modular power supplies are built for people that need redundancy. They're built well, redundant power supplies built for people that need redundancy, but fully modular power supplies are built for people that need to be able to hot swap if it's an option. They're built for people that care about cable management. They know their target audience. If you don't know yours, you're not going to sell a good product. And you can slowly figure it out, but it's going to take you a long time. Great example. I was hanging out in the Polymaker Discord. I've been hanging out there a little bit. They've got a ton of people there, and they're kind of often having hangouts. When nobody's in my server, it's late at night. I go into my server for a bit. No one hangs out with me. I'll go to the Polymaker server. There was someone in there talking about selling products. And I said, what are you charging? They were doing a 70% Cinderwing Crystal Dragon. And they were selling them at like these flea market things, right? They were selling them for $15 and they were taking like 12 or 13 hours to make. And I said, my God, you're charging way too little. I said, do you have any competition? They said, no, I don't. I said, double your price. And Daddy Wazzy, who was in there, said, I told him the same damn thing. He won't listen to me. I'm like, all right, fine. I'll get off my high horse. And then we started getting into business again. So I dug into it a little bit. I said, if you have no competition, I would bet that when someone buys one of your dragons for $15, they're handing you a 20 and you hand them a $5 bill. Why don't you just make your price $20? Because if they are willing to spend 15, they're likely willing to spend 20. But if they were willing to spend 15 and they're not willing to spend 30, I would bet that at least 50% of them are willing to spend 30. At $30, you can make more net profit. Net profit is where you survive. And if you have your sales, you double your net profit, you have made more money because you're spending less time to get there. I want you to make more net profit. To do that, you have to figure out what your audience can handle. If your target audience cannot handle the extra money, and you are running razor-thin margins, you didn't do your research. Razor-thin margins are not how you build a business. I say that there are businesses that do run razor-thin margins, but they have volume, right? Restaurants run very, very, very thin margins, but they have volume. There's a big deal to that. The one I'll bring up, since it was something that I was looking at and considering myself, and then I opted out of it because I did the math. Applebee's. Applebee's recently did, it was like $200 or $300 for 52 $30 meals. So for a flat rate, you got a card that had basically up to 52 meals at $30 per meal. You could do one redemption per day. The idea was once a week for a year. Yeah, it was their date night thing. And you look at it and say, well, wait a minute, that's like $1,500 of value for $200 or $300. Then you realize tax and tip are not included. I did the math. You figure it's a $30 meal because, of course, you're going to max it out. And alcohol is not included either. So if you get alcohol, you got to pay extra for that. But let's just say it's exactly $30 in food. Tax on that is going to be $2, right? Yeah, $2 and no. Grant, 7% sales tax where you live. It should be $2.10, right? Yeah, it should be $2.10. Tip on $30 is going to be, if you're cheap, $3, but realistically, you're probably somewhere in the $7 to $10 range. So let's call it $7. Let's round up the tax to $3. Let's call it an extra $10 a week. That means you're spending an extra $500 if you do it every single time. So that $200 or $300 card now is actually costing you an extra $500. And as my brother says, it's still Applebee's, okay? It's still Applebee's. You gotta remember, still Applebee's. And I said, well, I don't want to be the person that spends $700 at Applebee's. But what they're realizing is that the vast majority of people that will buy that will not end up using all of it. They will play to razor-thin margins and say that they'll take the money up front. And they'll make it more there. Now, the tips are paid out to, hopefully, the wait staff. The tax is paid out to the state and the county and all that. It's a brilliant idea, but it also, to me, shows a company that is in need of cash. Mike's Revolut Machines Win says, it's a one-meal coupon for a date night. Yeah, one per week. It's a 52 meals. So it went on sale a couple of weeks ago. I was talking with Amber about doing it because I said, you know, one day a week where I didn't have to cook, and if I did it right, if I could bundle it with half price appetizers where I could get half price on the food so I could get double the amount of food for the money, you could make a reasonable case that you could get decent value out of it, like money. But I also didn't want to eat Applebee's once a week for a year. It's probably not that healthy. I could spend $30 there. But they knew that people aren't going to. They recognize that you're never going to get dead on $30. You're either going to go under to like $25, or you're going to go over. And if you go over, their real margins kick in and they start to win. This is a marketing plan. This is a marketing strategy. It's either going to work for them or it's not. Now, yes, they're a multi-million dollar company. But I do believe that two people could eat at Applebee's for $30 if you're, you know, kind of playing it safe. Mike, it is it's effectively a $30 voucher for 52 trips is what that equates to, for reference. So, and I'm pretty sure they sold out in minutes, but as a lot of people were saying, bots probably bought them. They'll be resold at an exorbitant rate to people that probably, you know, could use the money or could use the food, I guess would be the right way to put it. You don't need to have a baller marketing plan like that. But you have to understand who your target audience is. I am likely within the Applebee's target audience. But I don't fit in the I want to eat at Applebee's once a week category. And I feel like they know that. Kit says, you could eat Applebee's for $30, but why would you? That has like been the main comment here that I see, but it's Applebee's, but it's Applebee's. But if you are food insecure and you don't have a lot of money, a thing like that, that's a godsend, right? Like in another life, if I had a ton of money, I would buy those and I would give them to people that were food insecure, right? When I saw someone that would need help, I would give them money. I would buy them food. I would put them up in a hotel for a night or something like that, whatever it might be. But I'm not in that life, not yet at least. Hopefully we'll get there at some point where I can start giving back. And yeah, everyone does have their favorite chains. But I believe that is a numbers game. How many they had, we don't know. They said they had a limited amount, which could just be a way of creating fear of missing out, right? The FOMO. Those are all phenomenal marketing tactics. when you are first understanding who you want to build your product for, understanding their buying habits are good too. I've now become a Costco shopper and I hate myself for it because I buy my emotional support chicken every single week. And that's what I eat. I eat rotisserie chicken every week because it's a $5 chicken. But I recognize I can't cook for that much. I could buy a whole chicken and I could cook it for less than that. But not when I include my time. But I recognize that's not normally the only thing that I buy. They will lose money on the chickens. They will lose money on my brother's absolute favorite thing at Costco, which is the hot dog combo. Yes, Jonathan, I just gave you a shout out in a podcast for the fact that you love the Costco hot dog, and you are probably screaming in the background right now. because I just said that on a live stream. He says he's right here. And I'm sure he's like, yeah, Costco hot dog. But Costco will lose money on those things. And the CEO is quoted saying that he will effing kill somebody, anybody that tries to make the hot dog more than $1.50. And while I can agree that it is an insane value, Costco recognized that those are things that bring people in the door. Why is the chicken literally one of the furthest things for you to get? It's so your dumbass goes through the rest of the store and buys other things. This is marketing. This is how it works. This is how you work on people's brains and understand that they're going to see something else. Say, ooh, I want this. Ooh, I want that. Oh, you know, I knew that I needed some sweet peppers. I love those little sweet peppers. They're just baby bell peppers, but I love them. They're great. Do I need the 2-pound bag that Costco has? No, I can never finish it on time. But do I often buy it? Yeah. So when the peppers start to get a little soft and like, they're questionably edible, I throw them outside. I let the birds eat them. And if I'm lucky, maybe I'll get some pepper plants one day. We'll see. So far, the answer is the birds eat them and I don't get pepper plants. But oh well. You have to look at understanding that marketing position. Where does your customer also shop? How much are they willing to spend? Are they a Yeti customer or are they an Ozark Trail customer? You can find this out by just looking at them. It's the, how do you know if somebody's vegan? Don't worry, they'll tell you. How do you know if someone does CrossFit? Don't worry, they'll tell you. How do you know if somebody loves 3D printing? Don't worry, they'll tell you. It is so easy to trick the human mind into giving you more information than it wants by making it feel welcome. It's all about understanding how to manipulate. And I hate that, but it's one of the best things that you can do is to understand how the human mind works and how to ask the right questions to get the right answers that you're looking for. You want to see if someone can handle a premium product? Take a Yeti mug with you and see what they say when you drink out of it. You could also just see what mugs are around. Don't worry. If they're Yeti mugs, you'll see it. They'll have bumper stickers, you know? Social engineering. Yeah, social engineering. It's a fancy word for being able to manipulate people. I'm sorry, but that's what social engineering is. It's a fancy word for manipulation. Stop using 1234 as your passcode. Hey, that's the passcode to my X1 Carbon, damn it. But it's the same way that Mark from P.O. Poly socially engineered me to giving the answers that he was actually looking for the Magneto X when we were just having a generic conversation. Mark knew his target audience. Mark knew that I, as a business owner, would be interested in buying a Magneto X. He knew that. I'm fairly certain I talked about it in a video where I said, if this thing holds up to what it is and what it claims to be, it will be the best printer for small businesses on the market, period. Although I guess I said that after it was announced. So Mark wouldn't have known that I wanted it. I know I fit within the target audience of what Mark was expecting for P.O. Poly. Boy, I hope it performs, because I'm kind of excited for it. But yeah. Common inventor pitfalls. It's not understanding their target audience. It is the most popular pitfall that we see. When they don't understand who it is, why it is, and for what reason. If you say that anyone that plays football is your target audience, I would argue that there is your professional football players and your kiddie football players, right? The ones that are in elementary school or kindergarten that are playing flag football or something like that. Then there's the, when I go scan the Bucks and I put my car in the same parking lot as their cars, I bring the average value of the vehicles in the lot down by a significant amount type of football. The Tampa Bay Bucks are unlikely to buy your football product. Why? Because they don't need it. That's okay. But if you don't recognize that, oh, well, that's what I meant. Well, that's not what you said. And as a product developer, I have to look at what you say versus trying to understand what you mean. Sorry. I got like a mustache hair that keeps hitting my nose. Anyone ever had that where it grows? Oh, it's because I have a scar here. Might be growing weirdly out of the scar. Sorry, it keeps bothering me. Like the stream if you haven't. 59 watch and 37 likes. Like the damn stream! Please and thank you. And I hate that this is the biggest problem that we have with our inventor group. Because we have such an awesome community of inventors, especially here locally, that there's so much opportunity for them to succeed. But a lot of them don't understand who they're selling to, when in fact they themselves are the only actual target audience. They're the only ones. They are the only target audience. It's them. A target audience of one. And I hate having to help them into that realization. But what I will tell you is that we gain so much respect from people when we do that, because we show that we're not in this to take their money. We're in it to help them succeed. Other job shops are going to just take your money, and if your product has a market position of one, that's not their problem. Now, I will say, this practice that we do is absolutely negatively affected by the fact that we have morals and ethics when it comes to working with inventors. But I refuse to compromise my morals and ethics when it means hurting others. So what are we doing to solve this problem? We are building the Making Awesome Academy. That is going to be a class system where you, as a first-time inventor, can learn how to do this stuff from an expert. From multiple experts, in fact, who will help guide you through the process of going from idea in head to idea in hand. It will be built on three pillars: educate, empower, create, in that order. Because if you are empowered without being educated, you generally don't succeed unless you get lucky. If you are creating without being educated, you hurt yourself. If you are creating without being empowered, you'll never finish. You have to do it in order. We need to first educate you so you can be inspired to create. That is how we do it. And if you're interested, email me, youtube@3dmusketeers.com. I want to start building a list. I got to get the landing page up for the website. We are ready to go into filming. We're going to have two different structures. There's going to be, well, three, I guess. There's going to be an initial intro class. It will be three classes total. It'll be $50. And that will be the, do you like me? Do you like how I speak? Do you like the information that we are providing? If you do, there will be a much larger set of classes that will be considerably more expensive. But they will help you and guide you through so that when you come out of that program, you'll be ready to walk into a product development shop and say, here's my idea, here's my marketing plan, this is my target market, help me build it. And I will tell you that the amount of money that we are going to charge you to take those classes will be less money than if you got it taught to you one-on-one. In fact, it will be about a third of the price than if you got taught it one-on-one. Even further, that $50 set of three classes will come out of the larger price. So the large price will be one bundle. I am moving toward a system where we see a market. I know who you are because you contact me all the time. I know the problem that average inventors have. And I know where they have their pitfalls. I have my market analysis. And I know how to solve it. Because I have the skill set. Our team has the skill set. I personally have the skill set to help somebody solve this problem. What I don't have is the time. So instead of you paying me thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, you pay once. You get classes that you can take at your pace. A community that you get to be involved in that is other people just like you. And private live streams where you can ask questions to me directly and I will help you one-on-one. We will record them and we will use them as content, but they won't be live to a broad audience. This is all part of our marketing plan for the Making Awesome Academy, because we have found a hole in a market that if we don't fill it, more people will get taken advantage of, and I have a problem with that. My ethics and morals do not let me take advantage of those people, and instead I want to empower them to not be taken advantage of and share information with others. We will actively say that you should share information that you learn here with others. Don't share the videos, obviously, but share that information. Spread the wealth of knowledge and tell them where they can find it. Have your customers be your empowered salespeople. Give them a commission if they, you know, bring people to you. That's a affiliate system, right? This is what marketing looks like. Jay Lopez says, if trying to sell to businesses, does it make sense to send free samples to see if they're interested, if there is interest in your target market? That kind of depends. If it is like a successful business will have a reasonably well-defined target market. Let's say you're going to go to engineering companies. Well, you'll know what kind of engineering they do based on their website. And if you don't, you can walk in their front door and say, hey, this is the kind of work that I do. Would you guys be interested? I will say that I recently did a project for free that we would normally charge between $3,000 and $4,000 for. If there are some technicalities of why I couldn't charge for it, but there's a good reason to it. I'm being helped to find out whether or not we can turn this into a business. There's some trading that occurs where I am trading my expertise for somebody else's expertise. I am willing to do work for free if they help me better understand their market. That few hours of my time and few hours with a $35,000 3D scanner is pricey. Don't get me wrong. That's a very expensive trip for me. But there is so much value in that to me as a business because I get information from my exact target market who knows the other people in the industry who can not only give me their contact information, but let me know whether or not they would be interested because they can do the warm introduction for me. That is business 101. If you have the opportunity to trade for services, trade for introductions, trade for knowledge, and you believe that knowledge has more value than the work that you are doing, 100% do the trade. Because I could sit there and do this research myself, take a couple of days, maybe a week, maybe a couple of weeks to get the information, or I can spend an afternoon trading a favor for a favor. And as far as businesses are concerned, you wanna know how you earn respect? That's how you earn respect. Itchy nose. Why does my nose always... Is it like when I move and my gosh, I'm going to trim up the mustache when we're done. She might be getting a little unrowdy here. Jay Lopez says, I really do appreciate your ethics, Grant. Also, thank you for your perspective on my question. Dude, totally. I would not just make them something. I would try to say, hey, I want to, if they, first figure out if they're already using 3D printing. If they are, your value might not be realized to them. But if they aren't using 3D printing, say, if you see that there is a pushback, we see this a lot with engineering companies. If there's a pushback because they don't understand the tech, say, how about this? I will do some work for you completely for free. All that I ask is you help me understand your business model. Let's trade. And if it doesn't work and you don't like it and it doesn't fit your needs, I will never talk to you again if that is what you want. But if it works, you give me the opportunity to help you add money to your bottom line. Prove them the value of the product, then continue on. What we like to do when we do those kinds of things is we tell them what the price would be. Hey, this would normally cost this much. You know, hey, this entire project would normally be $4,000. Okay, Grant, it's worth $200. It's a $200,000 product for us. $4,000's a rounding error. We don't care. Cool. Great. Welcome to the business. But if you don't understand their projects, what they're doing and why, you can't sell a product that is going to hit with them. If a business, businesses are just people. Businesses are, I was going to say families. They're not. They're people. Businesses are run by people. Businesses have target markets. Businesses have marketing plans. Businesses have all of these things. And if they don't, they're charities. That's a joke. Charities have better marketing plans than a lot of businesses do, but the joke is that they don't have any of that. They're not making money, so they're a charity. But when you are looking to go after a business, they give you most of the information that you need public on their website. We often get crap that our website doesn't have a lot about previous work that we do, and that's because the fun work I can't talk about, the boring work I can. It's frustrating. But yeah. For businesses, it is safe to do the trade, but don't put it on the table to start. If they have pushback on pricing, that's when I put it on the table. Give them the first hit for free. The next one is going to cost them. This is very similar with inventors as well. When you are working with the general public and you want to sell something, you have to give some away. Don't expect for people to pay for a beta test. That's not how this goes. Give them the product and say, I would be more than happy to provide you with... So if they don't fit your target market but are interested, give them the product. If they do fit your target market and they aren't interested, ask them if they would still be okay with trying the product for a few minutes and let you know if it works. And if they like it, you might see their mind changes, and you then have to see, well, what was their holdback? You will often get more help from the no's than you will from the yeses. The answer of no should always carry a why. And if you need to clarify the why, then you're not asking the why effectively. If you say, is this a product that you would use? Someone says, no. Say, well, I believe you fit within the target audience, and I'm trying to understand why. I don't want to pressure you into buying it. That's not what this is. This is for market research. Can you help me understand why this isn't a product that you might want? Say, well, I don't play football. I don't like football. I didn't even know the Super Bowl was today until yesterday when somebody mentioned it. I don't care. I'm not a fit. And you say, you know what? You're totally right. See you later. Instead, they might say, well, it's too expensive. I don't know how I could put it in my house. I don't know if I could put it on my desk at work. This is really what I would want it to look like. And you get them in a conversation and you're taking notes where you can get this kind of knowledge for little to no extra cost. That is where you learn so much. And that learning is costing you very, very little. If it costs you a product that you send with someone and you never hear from them again, and you got all that useful information from them, my God, you have won. You've won. You can do focus groups. I think the idea of a focus group has fallen away. Focus groups were often done via shopping malls, where people would, those be people holding the clipboards that would ask if you had a second to answer a questionnaire and, you know, for the chance to win a $100 gift card. It's a focus group. You just didn't realize you were a part of it. The timeshare things where they give you a free dinner, but they do a timeshare presentation, that's a focus group. You just did it for the free dinner and you stupidly bought a timeshare because you're an idiot. I'm sorry, timeshares are for morons. Don't get mad at me. My goal is to help as many people as I can. To do that, we often have to help people help themselves. I can tell you what I believe your target audience is, but I might not be right. Historically, I'm pretty close, but I might not be right. Or I can teach you how to do it yourself. Teach a man to fish rather than give him the fish, right? Teach a person to fish, I guess, should be the way that we say it now. Teach an individual to fish. I have to get better at being more correct in those. I'm sorry. Inventing is not easy. Chances are you will fail. Chances are you're going to fail a few times before you get it. Learn from your mistakes, learn why you failed, and from there, you will succeed. We see a lot of inventors fail because they don't understand who they're selling to. They don't understand that their target audience is not everybody. And they have done zero market research. They don't have a marketing plan and they don't have a business plan. And while you don't necessarily need a marketing plan or a business plan to succeed, you absolutely need to understand who your target market is. Hope that's helped. Any questions before we call this one? We've done a solid 90 here. Jay Lopez, this is more for the viewers as Grant is speaking on a different subject. Well, you caught me right at the end, so I'm going to answer your question. Is there a large format enclosed printer more than 400 by 400 millimeters, similar to a Voron 2.4? Off the shelf, there are plenty. How much are you willing to spend? Because the problem is there are. They're not very cheap. I would, someone's recommended Rat Rig. I would caution on the Rat Rig. I don't think that their documentation is great. Nadav said the T500 is low cost, but it's not enclosed. I have one. I need to check it out. It's a big, stupid bed slinger. Like, it's a ridiculous printer. But it's not enclosed. And you would need a massive enclosure for a printer that size. I would recommend for printers that are above 300 millimeters that you go to Core XY. There is no reason that bed slinger should be bigger than 300. There just isn't. When they get bigger than that, there's so much inertia behind them that it becomes a problem. Gus the Cat says, Facebook ads are the new focus group. You can put your offer in front of your target audience and add test offers. If your target audience are your parents, sure. But I'm 34 and I spend no time on Facebook. The only part of Facebook that I use at this point is Facebook Marketplace. I do not use Facebook. I don't like Facebook. It's a cesspool of political BS that I don't want to be involved in. Someone recommended a Talos 600 from Project R3D. Let's see it. Is a kit. And we'd want the Mosquito Magnum. It's a $6,200 printer. It's not that bad for pricing. But yeah, when you're looking at large format printers, that size, you're talking $5,000 and up generally. Back up the Brinks truck. A Stacker 3D S4 XL could have panels added to the front, maybe the top along their side, along with their side panels, and only cost $22,000 and a bad printer, but hey, 600 millimeters cubed. Justin Chamberlain for the kidney shot, man. Jeez. Gus the Cat says Instagram is also part of Facebook Meta. Okay. If we look at Meta as a company, yes, I use Instagram. But that's just for doom scrolling. Yeah. Charsman says, the girlfriend isn't scared. I'm finding ladies to talk to on Facebook. She's worried I'm talking to Dan about his crappy car that runs and drives and all sales are final. It's funny because it's true. I know Jonathan's girlfriend, and I know that Jonathan is often looking at crappy cars that I have to yell at him not to buy. Because I'm sorry, Jonathan. The 90s era Volvo station wagon that has had a jank-ass LS swap is not a safe vehicle. It's safe for you. It's not safe for anybody else. It's two steps away from being the killdozer. It's so true, and sir, it's an 89. That does not help your case. Mark Bass says, I created something. Problem was once created. I created something. Problem once created, no one wanted. Geometry used to matter. Guess I missed that one. Well, yeah. Kit, but I could fix it. Yeah, I know, but I could fix it. Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna call out some people here. Y'all gonna feel called the hell out right now. You say you can fix it. Where was the last project you said that you could fix? How's that one going for you? Where was the last project that you completed 100%? How's that one going for you? Oh yeah, there's a lot of silence. That's what I thought. And it's not just because I'm in a room on my own. Dang it. Hilarious. Jay Lopez, thanks, Grant. That's kind of what I thought. By the way, wish I could have met you at Printed Solid. I work in the same complex in the next building over. Well, chances are we will be going back to Printed Solid after 3D Printopia this year. It's always nice to go visit them and just see what's going on. I consider Dave a friend. So if I can go visit his operation, we always like to. And quite frankly, found a beautiful Airbnb in the area that was pretty well priced. So I think we're gonna do that again. It was kind of a nice place last time. Although their internet was rough, so maybe we'll find a different place because their internet was actually really, really bad. And I ended up uploading videos from Dave's place. It was hilarious. But yeah, we'll probably be going back to Printed Solid again. As a lot of you know, I don't generally post when we're going to be out of town. It's a security risk. So if you want to know when I am leaving and when I'm coming back, like if you wanted to meet up with us somehow when we travel, the best way to do it is be in the Discord, because I will normally talk about our travel plans in there, so that if there are any fans that we talk to often that want to hang out, go get a drink or whatever it is, I'm happy to go do that. Bearded Bucket says Rocky Mountain again this year. Yes, I hope. I need to buy the plane tickets. I haven't done that yet, and I need to buy those plane tickets. We bought the hotel room, and I need to get the car. And I need to figure out what we're doing after, because I don't know. I really like Colorado, and I kind of want to stay out there again for a couple of days. We'll see. We might go early, we might go late. I don't know. But yeah, $10 tier higher on the Patreon, YouTube channel member, or my preference, which is direct pay via PayPal because the fees are lower. $10 tier higher. Come hang out with us. I will be there in just a few minutes. But that is all I have for you guys today. This has been episode 174 of the Making Awesome Podcast, the biggest challenges for new inventors, which is your market position, target audience, and basic product niche. And hey, a little business plan doesn't hurt either. Thanks for watching, everybody. Stay safe out there. Stay off the roads tonight. Don't forget to call your loved ones. And as always, keep making awesome. Have a good one.